Now, from a nondescript server room in a top secret location in Southern California, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got a number of questions in store for you this week, amongst all of our other things. So, Emily is going to ask me about teaching children to use tech responsibly and morally. Peter, what are my top tips for securing home networks? Isidore, will wearable technology change the way we interact with computers? And Patricia, she wants to know about EMF 5G and all these impacts on mental and physical health. Jordan, with technology evolving, how can he stay relevant at work? Steve Keske is going to join me. We're going to talk about the evolution of TV programs due to technology, of course. Marty, the Top Job Lab Boba Chair, and 73 and Sunny Grips for Roku Remotes. Keith M. Cedor, non-Apple programs where Apple has their own versions. And on the Scam Series, avoiding a job, a vague, really vague job scam setup. If you miss any of that, of course, you can check out the podcast at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can also ask us questions. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns. Of course, you can also phone me at 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. Let's dive into the tech news from the past week, and there are a number of different things. First up, I didn't catch all of the Super Bowl commercials this year. One that I missed, but stumbled across later, was for OpenAI. These are the makers of ChatGPT. It's almost become a household name at this point. The commercial, though, it was a bunch of dots flying around the screen, evoking both dot matrix printers and pointillism paintings. Some cool audio, of course, came along with that, which included a modem connection, threw me back into my days back in the early 90s. And it was all advertising artificial intelligence. The biggest problem with this ad, though, isn't what you think it was. OpenAI, pushing the idea of AI for everything, made their commercial entirely with real people. Not AI. Not its own AI. Just real people. They even called it a celebration of human creativity, which is, it's odd. It's strange. It's bizarre, considering the apparent underlying goal is for us to use AI to supplant our creative nature and force it into, well, and coming out of, the machine. So I don't know what they were thinking. I'm thoroughly confused on that one. Oh, well. Paramount's 2024 Super Bowl. So we're going back a year. They had streamed it, and they had many complaints about their live stream. The top streamer, Netflix, they had problems streaming live events recently with the Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson fight and later with the two football games on Christmas Day. So this year's Super Bowl came around and was on the number 6 streamer by viewership. So the idea already, it was kind of lagging. Tubi, which is owned by Fox, is the largest FAST, or free ad-supported television network, FAST. Now, it's still 4K streaming for free, but it's to a massive audience. All of this really seems like a recipe for disaster. You would think, okay, these guys, they're the number 6 network. It's all of these different things coming along. And yet, oddly enough, Tubi pulled off a resounding success, perhaps built on the fact that it was Juggernaut Fox behind the scenes, making it all look good and sound absolutely amazing. I wonder if Netflix and Paramount are paying attention to this little upstart now. Who knows? Now, Apple Intelligence is only available to people who have the iPhone 15 Pro or any of the iPhone 16. various items within the iPhone 16 line. iOS 18 features barely include anything but Apple Intelligence. And I've discussed this. I've lamented this lack of interest in owners of the older hardware for a number of months now. Have they forgotten about us? Have they forgotten how many people out there have iPhone 14s, 13s, 12s earlier? I don't know. But look, this is a struggle for me. So it amazes me that I heard that people are turning off this new feature. Other than, of course, Keith actually has noted that it is a near useless addition, and a lot of his clients are saying they don't really care about it. So now imagine my surprise when people found that the latest versions of iOS 18 have actually turned that feature back on, turning on Apple Intelligence without asking. It's bad enough that we turn off features for privacy, for battery life, and other things, only to find them turned on again. But a massive, unused bloatware like this? I struggle with this. I think Apple is getting lost in their own dream world again, and that does not bode well. Now, there is a new announcement coming up next week. We don't know what it is. We're going to be watching on it, and we'll probably cover it if it's anything major. Now, this next one, it reads like the opening acts of a villain in a James Bond movie. The British government last month ordered Apple in secret, all right, I'll drop the accent, to create a security backdoor into all content uploaded by iCloud users. I want you to think about this. Everybody who owns an iPhone, they want access to see everything that's on your iPhone through iCloud. Everything you do on your iPhone is uploaded to iCloud, all of that. Even scarier, their demands technically extended to all iCloud users around the world, including those encrypted items with no further legal blocks or checkpoints involved. Their government gets access to all of it. They don't need to go off and get subpoenas or any of that. They don't have to follow any of the usual legal routes. They can just go on and go, oh, hey, we want to see that person's information there. Yeah, that's right. They demanded access to everything. So far, fortunately, it appears that Apple has completely rejected that idea. They've done this many times in the past. They tell the governments, forget it. We don't even want to touch this. And they base that on privacy. But they also, of course, have the technical reason backing it up in that all of the encryption keys, all of this data that you've got on your iPhone that you upload to the iCloud, it's all encrypted. And those keys are based outside of their view, Apple's view, and control. So they couldn't even give access if they wanted to. And yet, well, the British government's moving forward with that, and we'll see how that unfolds. I don't think that the Brits are going to get anywhere. Now, something also not getting anywhere, Blue Origin. This is Jeff Bezos' own space venture. It took some news spotlights away from SpaceX this week, but not in a good way. On Wednesday, everybody was told to work from home on Thursday. What followed on Thursday was an announcement of a 10% staff reduction after their latest launch, the first of the new Glenn rocket, which was the first of their rockets to reach mid-Earth orbit. Now, about 1,000 of their employees were let go, and this was all based upon Blue Origin not being, quote, set up for the kind of success we really wanted to have. This was according to their CEO, Dave Limp. Now, the Blue Origin track record so far, 37 overall launches, with only about 20 of them reaching the Kármán line. That's the very edge of space. And one, this latest one, actually into space. SpaceX is light years ahead with over 19 into orbital space so far this year. 134 last year alone. They're lagging. And statistics and surveys interest me, especially when it comes to adoption of technology. In this case, it seems that 77% of people in India trust AI. Other countries follow, with China at 72%, Mexico 55%, Brazil 52%, South Korea 50%, and Japan 38%. And after all of that, I feel more reassured in my long stance of concern regarding AI, as I read that only 32% of us here in the United States have trust in it. Perhaps it's our fear of dystopian futures, our lack of trust in big tech, or concerns over job displacement. It doesn't matter. There is more to this entire survey, as they covered a number of other countries not mentioned here. But worldwide, it seems that many countries trust AI far more than we do. Coming up next, Emily asks me about teaching children to use tech responsibly and morally. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Reached out to me. She had a big question. How can I teach my children to use technology in a way that is both beneficial and morally grounded? And that's a big one to talk about. The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Teaching children to use technology responsibly is very much like teaching them to use a knife in the kitchen. The knife, it's able to help them prepare a wonderful meal. You go through and you can chop up items, and you can the onions, the peppers, the whatever it is, the potatoes. But it also can cause harm. We know this. If it is not used properly, if you don't follow the basics, then things can go wrong and you'll have to dig out the Band-Aids from the kitchen drawer. This is how you can guide youth in using technology in a positive and responsible way. First up, you need to plan out very carefully not only where they're at, but what your next steps are, what the follow-up steps are, and so forth. You need to be establishing your own plan, and that plan is going to be based upon how they work with technology. And this includes setting up all of the different things I'm going to be covering, but mostly setting clear rules around the amount of screen time, ensuring they know when and how much time they can spend on devices, when they need to be stopping and when they need to be going off, brushing their teeth, putting their pajamas on and heading to bed. Okay, so we set up these different things, and your rules are going to be different from everybody else's. We need to establish these rules and share these rules so that youth understand that there are rules in life that must be followed. So this is helping them both dealing with technology, but helping them deal with future life events. So we look at that. And I'm gonna slide off onto a tangent real quick. There are people out there that take their smartphone and they hand it over to the kids, and it can be an iPad, it can be the older phone, it can be whatever, and they just hand it to them, and they use that device, that technology, as a babysitter. And I'll tell you, an idle mind with access to what we can access on one of these smartphones, on a tablet, there's all kinds of just horrible areas to go in, but even areas that are just not beneficial. The idea of utilizing my smartphone as some kind of constant entertainment device is not a good thing to get into. If I'm bored, I shouldn't be heading to my smartphone. Likewise, we need to be training this, not at the age of 20, not at the age of 12, not at the age of 5, but even earlier than that. Part of that is just by not even giving them access to it until they're at least responsible. And you don't use it, again, as a babysitter. Now, next up, I want you to encourage critical thinking by discussing with them everything that they're doing on that piece of technology, whether it is, yes, the smartphone or the tablet or the computer. It doesn't matter what we're talking about. It's a matter of talking about what they're watching, what they're playing, what they're reading on the line. And you need to work with them in conjunction with them to help them to discern what aligns with proper values, what you feel should be the things that they are learning, where they're going to find beneficial uses of technology, and where they're going to find non-beneficial uses. Oh, wait, you know, maybe, and you've got to approach this. I mean, you've got to remember these are children and you want them to learn. You can't say, you can't go there. I want you to encourage that thought process in your mind and in their mind, and you want to go to them and say, is that really, did you find fun in that? Did you get uncomfortable? Were you bored when you did that? So if you were bored when you did that, would you say you shouldn't do that again? Whatever it is, and you guide them through the process by asking questions, asking what they saw, asking them to repeat back, asking them to give their own read on it, and asking them, well, do you think I would do that? Do you think that would be a good thing for you to do next time? And you start promoting this idea of them being questioned, but also them questioning for themselves. You're empowering them when you start off these thought processes instead of, don't go to that website. Oh, don't do that. Don't play that game. Whatever it is. When you get into that hype mode, that's when they lose track of learning and critical thinking. Next up, yes, there's plenty of content out there that aligns with good moral teachings, and there are a variety of different apps and games that are definitely educational, that are constructive. There are plenty that aren't, so you need to ask them, and this is, again, part of that teaming up with them, hey, what did you learn? Did you learn anything cool with that? No, you just kind of poked at things and you saw little stars and little smiley faces bounce up, and that was all you really got out of it. That doesn't seem like all that much of what you like to do. You like to learn, right? Yeah. See how I set that up? I've promoted the idea of them seeking out knowledge instead of smiley faces. That's just a shift in how we're dealing with this. We do need to think about them as they get older. We need to think about their communications with their peers. We need to think about all of the different communications that they're going to have on the internet and in the workplace and everywhere else. So we need to make sure that they are respecting others. And we need to reinforce a lot of these different things that we really want to instill in them, the importance, the value of kindness. We need to make sure that everything is filled with integrity, but also empathy in online interactions. There's a lot that goes on out there on the internet. So, and all of these devices, everything that we're talking about with technology, this is across the board. They need to understand, be nice to others. That's a simple process, a simple thought, but the internet, unmanaged, just unrestricted, can get into so many different directions. We want to guide them towards all of that. Lastly, I want to talk about modeling good technology use. And this is going to be through our own interactions. If you sit around and you're scrolling Facebook all day long, you're sitting there and you're checking out this video and that video and all of these different things, and you're ignoring them, they're going to see that. And they're going to do what? What do you think they're going to do if you ignore them when you're on your smartphone? Well, they're going to ignore you when they are on their tablet. And that is going to be, that's going to be a rough thing. You need to be thinking about the balance. You need to be thinking about discipline in your own screen time habits, in your own behaviors. It's a teamwork effort here. And I want to really impress upon you, everybody, that we need to work together because we are moving at a breakneck pace towards all kinds of different issues if we don't guide everyone through the proper usage of technology. Not just the 5-year-olds, not just the 8-year-olds, the 10-year-olds, the 12-year-olds, even in our grown adult children, we need to say, hey, you're grown, you're out of the house, you do you, but is that really the best thing you should be doing? We can ask those questions. Are they going to listen to us? Who knows? But it takes that question to spark thought. Just like teaching your youth to use a knife properly, guiding them with that inquisitive nature, that patience, and setting up clear expectations will ensure that they will use technology as a tool for good. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. Microcenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, Microcenter is your resource. Check out Microcenter.com today. Microcenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. Keith Emcedor joins me now here on Computer Talk Radio. And Keith, one of the things I've been meaning to ask you for a long time, yeah. And this is revolving around the iPhone. And I'm going to start off by noting that I utilize both Safari and Chrome on my iPhone. And I was wondering, what do you do for your browser? But I want to expand that even more. Are there any other areas with any of the apps where you go, I like this third-party app more than whatever is built in? So let's start off with browsing. What do you use primarily?
Specifically on the iPhone or in my Mac use as well?
Let's start off with the iPhone and then give me the Mac too. Yeah.
With the iPhone, I do happen to use Safari as my primary browser, which is counter to what I do on the Mac. I do have a secondary browser installation of Firefox, but it is surprisingly not my primary on my iPhone, while Firefox is my primary on the Mac.
Okay. Not Chrome, though.
No, I am not a fan of Chrome. I mean, I have a few clients for whom they have very specific things. Like Chrome seems to be one of those apps, one of those browsers for whom developers of specific websites very intentionally make a website Chrome specific. For example, just this past week, I was doing a remote desktop session with a client, and while I set the machine up for them with both Safari and Firefox, I noticed they had Chrome installed. Mm-hmm. And they informed me that to do the telehealth with their doctor, they had to be using Chrome because something about the application within the web browser was specific to be optimized for use on Chrome, and it didn't work on Safari or on Firefox for them. So for that one application, they are using Chrome.
Interesting. So I do have Firefox and Chrome loaded on both my Windows and my Mac. Safari, of course, only works on the Mac unless you have like the really old version of Safari for Windows. How long ago was that deprecated?
I'm going to say
10 years ago.
I was going to say more like 15.
It's been a little further back.
Because you know what it was? There was a time when all of a sudden Apple, very tongue-in-cheek, was talking about, hey, these are the best software apps you can get on Windows. And they were talking about iTunes and Safari.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was pretty funny. And so I want to say that was probably about 15 plus years ago.
And then they turned around and gave them both the axe.
They really did.
Yeah. What are some of the other areas? Are there any other apps that you say, yeah, the Apple app just doesn't cut it for me. I go over to this other app.
Well, for sound editing, when we do our podcasting for the Nerdcast and Just Pour the Milk and other podcasts that we do, I have the option of using some of the tools built into the Mac, like QuickTime. QuickTime will do a lot of stuff like that, but it's it's kind of a Swiss Army knife, like a jack of all trades tool. Yeah. But you know what they say about a jack of all trades, it's a master of none. So I have other apps like Sound Studio, which I use. I mean, there's a free app called Audacity, which shows you an analog waveform, and you can edit that visually. But I find that Sound Studio works really well.
Okay.
Things like, I'm trying to think, you know, I don't do a lot of video editing, but I know a lot of people who prefer Premiere over Apple's Final Cut or iMovie.
Sure.
And what I've really discovered over almost 30 years of helping Mac users or Apple users at this point is that preferential differences really are just that, user preferences, because it's like you could have one person who prefers Coca-Cola over Pepsi, or one person who prefers Scott tissue over Kleenex, or vice versa. And it's simply a matter of what you like. It doesn't make it wrong. It just means that is the solution you've chosen for yourself. And if nobody, it doesn't impact anybody else, it doesn't really matter what you use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I agree with that. Even here on the show, a lot of people give me requests for recommendations of hardware or software. And I try to stay
neutral
on that. I'll give them a couple of different options.
But tell me that hasn't changed with age. I mean, because I'm sure that at some point earlier in your career, you would have been answering with great fervor about how you thought one piece of software was so much better than another. I know I used to. And now it's just like, your mileage may vary. Try them both and see which one you like better.
I'm going to say all the way along. I mean, there might have been a stronger leaning in one direction versus another. But I think part of that comes from how I entered into the realm of the professional world and how I went with the idea all the way along of there's a lot of options out there and you pick whatever's best for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Microsoft Office versus iWork. You know, I would take Microsoft Word and Excel for Mac over Pages and Numbers any day. However, when it comes to presentations, I will take Apple's Keynote over PowerPoint time and time again.
Yeah.
I mean, that night and day, a vast improvement. So it's like my dream suite is two from one and one from the other.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. Use what works for you, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We're more than happy to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. We're here for you, whatever they may be. Marty Winston joins me now. And, okay, sometimes you give me things that make my mind just go in off weird directions. And I see Bulba chair. And so I spent a number of years in Southern California where there's something called boba tea and has like little tapioca pearls in your tea. And I can't imagine that that is part of a chair. So I am really confused at this moment.
Well, this one's more a stool. So it's like a giant marshmallow, but not quite that soft. No, really, there's some surprising things about the new boba chair. This is from Top Job Labs. One is the shape. It's mostly a cylinder, but it's flared toward the top and bottom.
Okay.
So it looks a little like an oversized marshmallow. There are no arms, no wheels. And in that way, it's more like a stool. But stools are stiff.
Yeah.
Well, the boba chair has a fair amount of flex. Something kind of fun. We all naturally twerk a little as we sit down. And this thing twerks you back. A little bit of a wiggle jiggle as you sit down.
Okay. All right.
The fabric they use, and you have to love this choice for support and comfort and breathability, is the same fabric used for bikinis. No judgment if that's what you wear when you work from home. But if you do, but you don't live anywhere near Buffalo, Cleveland, Detroit, or Butte. That fabric, by the way, resists water, oil, and stains. You get a choice of colors, not garish like a lot of office furniture, and not pastel. More like civilized shades of what they call sky blue, urban fog gray, bright orange, neon green.
Okay.
There's a pneumatic lift inside to adjust the height of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's rated to hold up to 265 pounds. The base is heavy. It stays steady, but you can swing the seat about 50 degrees tilt in any direction, and you can rotate it in a full circle. So you're agile as you want to be sitting on top of this big, stretchy marshmallow-shaped stool of a chair.
It reminds me, I'm looking at the picture. I thought I would pull it up because you were fascinating me with it. It actually looks like you know, the pawn in a modern chess set, you know, something weird like that.
I've seen those. Yeah.
It's a cylinder, but it's a little flared at the top and bottom. It actually looks like a far more comfortable stool. Yes.
It is. And look, it's only got its base, so it takes less room on the floor than any kind of swivel chair with arms and all that going around.
Sure.
Right? You may think you need a back on your work chairs, but if you work at a keyboard, you spend your time leaning the other way.
Leaning forward, like putting my nose 2 inches from the screen, yes.
Sometimes, yeah. And if that's uncomfortable, you lean to one side, and the seat tilts there. Really, really cool for that.
How is the balance on that?
No challenge. You're not going to fall off.
Okay. All right.
It's not infinite. It's controlled. The 50 degrees is a limit to either side. And you've sat like that on rocks in the field. I know.
Sure. in the field.
And let me also say, with all the leaning and swiveling that it lets you do, don't be surprised if you don't get a tighter tummy and a trimmer torso.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, these could make sense in an office, no argument, but I think the big win is for people who regularly do a lot of work from home.
Mm-hmm,
so both at home and work, and at work at home, Boba chairs are launching now. They just started shipping, and they've marked down for their launch from $200 to $150
at
topjob.co.
Very cool. I'm digging the look of these.
It's a fun thing. One other thing I wanted to get at, well, we're here, from 73 and Sunny, they have grip stands for Roku remotes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we love Roku. Some Wi-Fi connects up to scans of streamers, HDMI pumps it to the TV set. We even have a couple of Roku TVs. Well, some of them have voice remotes. Some have the little express remotes. There's also a pretty good chance that thing will dig into a sofa somewhere. You have to dig it out again wherever that remote is.
I've never had that happen. Never mind. Go on.
Well, when the 73 and Sunny brand offered to let us review their grip stands for both remotes, I said, one of each, please.
Okay.
And so the one they sent for the slightly larger voice remote's black, has a molded in kind of curved easel shape that lets it stand up when you put it down on a table.
Okay.
There's a molded in place in the back where you can fit one of the tracker tags, like a Tilemate or an AirTag.
Okay,
It has buttons molded in place inside the back where you can, in the side, so you'll be pushing the buttons on the remote through those known locations.
Okay,
and a wrist strap. And for the slightly smaller Express, I got a glow-in-the-dark blue one from them.
Glow-in-the-dark blue. Okay. All right. I'm digging that. All right.
It also has a wrist strap and the tracker pocket and inside. It doesn't have the volume button bumps. Amazon shows the grip stand Express for about $15 and the voice remote size for $23.
You know, I'm really liking the idea of the glow-in-the-dark blue because, you know, my wife and I, when we're watching TV, it's usually with the I like the atmosphere. So the lights get dimmed down and sometimes I'm looking for the remote and I'm like, I can't find it. I want to pause the movie, and glow-in-the-dark would definitely solve that problem.
Well, you know, it's useless if it glows in the light.
There you go. There's that, too. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites.
These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can, and they have all kinds of tricks up their sleeves. A buddy of mine sent me an email, and he noted that this email was a scam. Up at the top, desktop support specialist with a particular city's county courthouse. Yeah, there's something odd there, city's county courthouse. But anyways, at first it does actually look a little bit legitimate, but my friend chased after some details in regards to this. And he found out it was a scam. The courthouse confirmed they're hiring for a different role within the IT department and that they don't work with the company that reached out to my friend. Okay, so let's label off some of the warning flags that we need to always be aware of whenever we're being contacted in regards to any position. First up, emails that claim to have found your information in a database, but you're not quite sure which database. You're not sure about the if your information should even be in that database. It's one thing to say, we found your information on LinkedIn. We're contacting you on LinkedIn because your resume matches up. Now, that's one thing. But if we look at something where we mysteriously found your name and we think you'd be a great fit, that is a warning sign right up at the front of this. Also, you need to look at the job details and you need to compare that with the job details from the employer's official listings whenever you can. Sometimes you don't always know who the employer, the end employer, is going to be. Then we get into vague descriptions or generic links to career pages. I will tell you that, yes, there are a lot of these links, and they're luring you in. They're looking to get you to click through. Also, you need to be watching out for subject lines that talk about urgency, that they utilize whatever kind of thing to get you to click through, to get you to post through. This is just like any of these other scams that are happening, but yes, they're starting to work towards leveraging the desire for people to get a job or get a new job or just to look further into potential new positions, and they're looking to leverage what seems like something legitimate to get you to do something that is not above board. Look, scams can look very legitimate along the way, and that's why you need to take very good care to read everything, to reread it, to go over this with a fine-tooth comb before you respond, before you take any action. It's really easy for us to go through and verify some of these different things ahead of time. Unfortunately, we sometimes don't. So you need to be very careful about sharing any sensitive information up front. Be very careful about downloading files or software that's related to job applications. A quick phone call is going to save you a lot of time. Make sure that you are really connecting up with whoever it is you think you're connecting up with, not some offshore scammer that's looking to take you, your identity, your money, and all of the rest of it on a ride. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Computer not working right? Benjamin Rockwell can make sense of it for you, helping you make sense of technology. Here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact you, me, all of our lives. And we go in a wide variety of directions. Again, broadest look. So, you know, what can I say? The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373. 888. Either way you want to reach out to us, we will answer your computer concerns and your technology questions. Or maybe I've got that backwards. It doesn't matter. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Well, we always are talking about technology and how technology influences our lives.
Sure.
But have you ever stopped and thought about the evolution of the TV programs because of technology?
So that's kind of a trick question, because I did go to college for radio and television broadcasting. And then amongst that, there were a lot of different classes and discussions about where we've been, where we're at, and where we're going. Not so much a lot on where we're going, but there was.
Yeah.
And I do know that I do know a number of different things from along the way. So please do elaborate on the thoughts that you've got going, though.
Well, my first thought was I was watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden the channels came up and stopped and showed me a whole bunch of bars, different colors.
Yes.
Okay. And then it flashed off and went on. I'm saying, I remember when TV went off at 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
And it didn't come on again until about 6:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh. All right.
Okay. And, you know, people don't understand. You mean the TV actually went off the air? And I said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Even so I grew up in the Los Angeles area and the greater Los Angeles Metropolitan Statistical District, if I remember correctly, something like that.
Something like that.
And so we're talking the number two television market in the country. And so, yes, I do remember I have seen, you know, the stations shut down at the end of the night. I remember as a kid growing up, on Saturday morning, it was time for Saturday morning cartoons. And yet I would get up before them by only about 15 minutes or so.
I wonder why.
Turn on the television. And, yes, they had the test pattern. And they would, at one point it was 7 a.m. and then later it was 6 a.m.
Yeah.
But, you know, 5 minutes before, 3 minutes before, whatever it was, they would play the national anthem.
Yes.
And
at night, too.
Yeah. And then they would roll into the programming.
Yep. And when I was watching TV.
Yes.
Way back when, it was only in black and white.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
No color.
Yeah.
Until I was the first color program that I really watched was Disney's Wonderful World of Color.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and all of those shows.
Yes.
But we forget a lot of people, you know, a lot of the movies from the 1930s had a lot of characters that came to TV.
Sure, yes.
Gene Autry, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans came to TV, and a couple, few more. And we don't really, you know, associate the original TV stuff. And you keep going on, and it went into color, and then you had Westerns, and then you had other drama shows.
Yeah.
And finally they got into, the American original, the American soap opera.
Okay.
And why did they call it a soap opera? Well, they called it a soap opera because that's who sponsored the shows.
Yeah.
Were the soap companies.
Sure, yes.
And, but that was the daytime genre for many years.
Yeah.
And then they went from those, they went to some things like, well, then they finally got into in the 70s, I think. Late 60s, early 70s, they started to get into the science fiction stuff. Now, and they used to have things like Inter Sanctum, Outer Limits.
I remember Outer Limits, yeah.
And
Twilight Zone was big.
Twilight Zone was really big during those years.
Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, some of the different things, you know, I mean, people don't realize. The younger generations have no idea, first off, that we originally it was, you know, television was really low resolution, and it slowly progressed. I Love Lucy was the first three camera production.
Yeah.
I remember discussing that. But, you know, over the years, we've added color and we've added more resolution and more resolution and even more resolution. As a matter of fact, a lot of the clarity that we have on today's screens has come just within the last, I'm going to say decade and a half now, 15 years.
Something like that. And you have to also understand that special effects is really took off in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, they had to start taking off in the 90s because, well, the resolution was increasing. The special effects needs for TV shows in the 70s was a lot lower. And and that was something that, you know, both of these come in parallel with each other. As we get better pictures, we need better special effects.
That's right. As TV shows changed according to the hardware that we had that they could play on.
Sure.
And then, of course, movies started to say, hey, we can put movies on TV too. Okay.
Yeah.
I just managed to watch a very old An Affair to Remember with Cary Grant and Deborah Carr.
Yes.
1957. Whoa. But, and there, you know, today people say, well, you can get it on Netflix or you can get it on Prime, whatever. You're streaming programs 24/7.
Yes. Individualized programming.
Yes. But, it's the idea that TV now can be had almost any time.
Yes. Yeah. Quite a world that we've shifted to.
Oh, yeah.
It's that, and it's, you know, the only lament I have is there's a certain level of instant gratification that we are instantly fulfilling. Just a matter of we can sit down. I remember, you know, having to search through the TV guide and plan out exactly what I wanted to watch for the week.
Yeah.
And that was fun. It was interesting. But today, you know, if I decide I want to watch a comedy, I can go on to, you know, what XYZ streaming service, whichever one I'm going to choose.
Yep.
And I can say, give me comedies. Give me science fiction comedies.
Yes.
Give me, you know, whatever it is, and it will give it. It will give me, although it gives me too many selections, I feel at times. It's like, which one do I want to watch now? As a matter of fact, every time I donate platelets at the American Red Cross, which is, I do this this act about once every 2 weeks on average through the year, and I sit there and I get to watch Netflix. I have to sit down and I have to select amongst many movies, one that's going to be roughly a little bit over 2 hours to match up with the time investment that I've got sitting there, just stuck and bleeding and, you know, yeah, them processing and all that.
The vampires are there, too.
Yes, yes. They're off in the back.
Yeah.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Peter reached out with a question. What are your top tips for securing home networks? He did it at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. And our home networks. There's so much we can do in regards to security, but a lot of it is going to be overkill. Everything I'm going to cover here is in the general guidelines of what everybody should be doing. And as long as you're doing these items, I think you're going to be really in the 99th percentile of being okay. Yes, there's weird situations, but you have to do so much more to protect against this. Improving your network security is like installing an advanced security system, an alarm for your home. It keeps intruders at bay and it protects your valuables. Likewise, securing your home network protects your technology within your home. It protects your computers and your devices that you're connecting up, but it also protects your valuable privacy and your valuable data and your valuable personally identifiable information. So that is really key to keep in concept here, in mind here as we're moving forward. The number one issue that I see for everybody is that they do not change default passwords. And they work with just the basic passwords that they're provided whenever they get, like, the Wi-Fi router. There are multiple passwords involved with your Wi-Fi router. There's going to be your administrative password that should not be something like password or super user or there's a number of different items, password one. They set these up so simple. There's a default password for the administration of your router. And if it is the default password all the time, All it takes is somebody getting onto your network and changing that password. Even if you've got the Wi-Fi password as something strong, they can get in there and they can do a number of different things that are not good. So let's also update your Wi-Fi password. That's the password that you use to connect your computer, your device, up to your network. And I want you to use something that is strong, something that is unique, that will prevent unauthorized access. And the stronger you make this, the better. And I will tell you, for most people, you've got at least a couple of homes, a couple of different residences within your home area that are going to be broadcasting their own Wi-Fi router signal. And for every one of those that you see, those are people who are within range of your home. So anybody in those homes can also see your router. And if they can see your router and you have some simple password in there, then they can see everything that's going on your network. So we want to avoid that. So what do? Strong password. Okay. What do I mean by a strong password? I utilize a quite long phrase. It is annoyingly long when I'm trying to type that phrase in. I just did this a couple of weeks ago. We have a laser printer, and it loses connection with our home network here. And it does this about once every 4, 5, 6 months. And then I have to enter it in again. And I'm sitting there, and the screen is all of about 2 inches by 2 inches. And I have to type on this little keyboard that is half the size of the keyboard on your smartphone. And I have to type in this long password. It's annoying for me to do that, but I only have to do it every so very rarely often that I'm not willing to back down and use a simple password, something that's short, a matter of a word and a number and a special character. Yes, I do include the numbers. I do include special characters. But the key thing here is I use an entire phrase all the way through there. And yes, you can substitute out letters, especially when we're dealing with phrases. You can substitute numbers for letters and special characters for those letters and things like that. Or you can tack them on various places. But the key thing is that strong password, just like you would for your administrative password. You want something that nobody's ever going to guess. Next up, you do want to make sure that you've got the highest level of network encryption going on your Wi-Fi. The one we suggest, if you have it, you will use WPA3. If you don't have WPA3, use WPA2. If you don't have WPA2, you have just basic WPA, or even worse, there's an old one out there. Hopefully you are not using WEP. This is routers from 15 years ago and stuff like that. If you've got something that old, if your router is older than about, I'm going to say, 5 years old, just go ahead and replace it. As a matter of fact, you're going to get a lot of benefit out of replacing it, including the ability to go to something like mesh. This is something I suggest to a lot of people. Those mesh networks will allow for greater throughput across your network. They will allow for a lot more devices to connect up, and they will give you better signal throughout your home. So a very good idea to go in this direction. Again, going back to that encryption, WPA3 is the top encryption at this time. Next up, you do need to make sure that you are regularly updating the firmware on your router. This is just got to be kept up to date. You want to make sure you're patching the vulnerabilities. There are performance improvements that come with this. Also, I want to make sure that you are updating the drivers on whatever system you're dealing with. So if you've got a smartphone, it's going to automatically have the latest drivers for that. But for your computer, you're running Windows, you're running Mac OS, there are constantly updates along the way. And if you've got an older version of the operating system or older version of those drivers going, that is going to open you up for potential concerns. And this is something across the board. It's not just with those particular drivers. I suggest to everybody, always keep all of the drivers as close to up to date as you can, whether we're talking about video or audio or, again, We're talking about securing home networks, the home network driver, your network drivers for your card in Windows, on the Mac OS, and so forth. Next up, guest network. If you have people showing up at your house and they want to use your Wi-Fi password, that's okay if you have a guest network. And this is simple. This has been built into most of the routers for the past 5 years, and for some of the router companies, a lot longer than that. So the key thing there is making sure you also have a strong password. That's a recurring theme here, strong passwords. And I will tell you, having that available is so easy. It's probably going to take you 10 minutes, 5 minutes even, to configure something like this up. But that also says that you care about the people that are visiting you. You're giving them their own chance to hit the internet through your guest Wi-Fi instead of relying on their data plan, the fact that AT&T doesn't provide really 5 bars of signal. They provide like 1 bar of signal where you're at, or whatever it is. And not to pick on AT&T, I could have easily have just said T-Mobile or Verizon. They just do have areas where it drops out. So doing that for your guests is a great thing. Next up, you want to monitor your connected devices. You want to make sure on a regular basis that you know all of the devices that are connecting up to your network. You can look at the access list, and it's named different things, and you can see, you can scroll on down. Okay, there's my computer name. There's my other computer name. There's my wife's computer name. There's the Xbox. There's all of my various smart home items. You just scroll through it. Look, this is just a way for you to make sure that you don't have any hangers on. You don't have anybody who's trying to log into your system that is 3 doors down. And it's a good thing to do. Look, just like a strong security system, that alarm system I opened with, will protect your home. Each of these different items is a great way to fortify your network against potential threats. I want you to think about it. I want you to feel free to ask me any questions as well. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Isidore reached out to me. Will wearable technology change the way we interact with our computers in the future? Isidore reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out as well. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back with you. So Isidore's question, will wearable technology change the way we interact with our computers in the future? I will say undoubtedly, this is a world that we're just starting to see just brief little introductions into the capabilities of this. Whether we're talking about the glasses So all kinds of different computer glasses, AR-based glasses. We started off with Google Glass, and then we've moved on to a number of them. And we see these loaded with Snapchat and with Meta and with all of these different variations on the theme. But they're delivering information to us. And having them is like having, we'll take this to the kitchen. We'll take this to the assistant that's constantly on hand, the sous chef, and they are providing updates and helping with tasks before, or they will be, before you even realize that you need assistance. As these devices become more sophisticated, they will really revolutionize a lot of how we interact with both the personal computing environment as well as professional computing environments. And yes, we're all going to experience a brand new shift, a brand new change as this all evolves. And I'm still reluctant to dive in. I think we are still so close to the very beginning that a lot of what we're seeing is just an experiment on how it works out, especially when you consider that so many of the companies will develop a product and then abandon it, and then develop another product and then abandon it. They're thinking about the capabilities of what we've got and pushing the envelope, but we're still not quite yet ready for prime time. In the future, though, I do see expanded functionality. Wearables are going to move beyond the basic of fitness tracking. They're going to allow us a lot more of those productivity features. And these are some that we see already. Email notifications, and there's a lot of hands-free interactions or even motion-based interactions. So, like, when you tilt the watch towards you, it'll actually come on and it will give you that notification. And they're working on this. They're getting better with this. But again, it's still in that very early stage. The people who are ahead, of course, are right now it's Apple with the Apple Watch. And there are, of course, the Android watches. They seem to be following, in my opinion, rather than leading. They do come up with new things here and there, but we're going to see a lot more functionality happen. We're going to start seeing the idea of monitoring blood sugars and blood pressure, and we've seen some introductions to that, but nothing that's on the big, huge, grand scale yet. We're going to start to see increased integration as well. And this integration is going to be across all of the platforms. It's going to be your wearable talking to your smartphone and to your computer, but on a far greater basis than we're doing right now. Right now, yeah, you can connect up and yeah, it'll exchange a little bit of information, but we're going to start seeing so much more where the information is going to just automatically transfer over. It will be controllable by yourself, but we'll start to see a very seamless user experience amongst all of this. Health monitoring, of course, is climbing, and we've seen a lot of stuff there. That is going to be a key area that is going to really change our lives. And I've kind of already referenced that. But we're going to see so many more advanced health monitoring capabilities that we're going to find that a lot of people are going to find them essential for everyday life. I want to suggest that we all at least watch where this is going. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the hardware or the software. You need to be monitoring both of those. And you need to be ready to move into it when you get to the proper point. You're going to need to learn now what they're doing. And you need to be on top of the features for that day when it comes. At some point in time, I am going to probably move to a point where I have two watches, which is becoming a very eccentric yet more popular opinion out there. The fact that you have your smartwatch on one wrist and you might have, in my case, I have a large fascination with a lot of the mechanical watches. So I'm going to go to two watches because of that. Is it going to be this year, next year, the following year? I don't know when, but at some point in time, I will find enough features where I think it is ready for me to make that investment. It's a sizable investment, though. We are going to have a data security issue that we're going to be needing to watch for as well. As these wearables start collecting a lot of personal data about us, we need to be on top of all of the different settings and security features and chase after the idea of privacy of our information. This is a tricky area because the features are going to be reliant upon us giving up some of our privacy to the phone, to the manufacturer, and so forth. And we have to be very careful about that. And that's an area which I find is lacking. Overall, is it going to change the way we interact with computers, with each other, with the world? Oh, yes, definitely. So just like having that sous chef, it helps the chef multitask more effectively in the kitchen. It helps him keep on top of all of the different things that are going on. It helps him to offload simple cutting tasks to make that magnificent meal. Wearables are going to do the same thing for us. They're going to help us stay connected. They're going to help us stay efficient in our computing tasks. And they will really take a lot of the lift off of us for some of the basic mundane data activities we need to do. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and so much more. Jordan reached out to me with a question. With technology evolving so quickly, how can I stay relevant in what is becoming a tech-driven workplace? That's a big, huge concern for a lot of people. And it's something that over the course of my career, I have seen us moving in an entirely different direction than what has happened from way back before. In the course of my career, I have seen people who are in the workplace and they've got all of their papers scattered across their desk. And they would ask, so Bob's got this newfangled computer thingy over there. What's he doing with it? And why is that so different than what I'm doing? And the reality is, Bob over there was really taking advantage of some of the very cool things through there. Look, you need to be thinking about your career not as whatever you went to college for, not what you've been doing over the course of however many years, but as an opportunity for you to utilize technology in new and exciting ways that you've never used it, that your company may never have used it, that industry may never have used it before. think of your career like that smartphone there. While it's new and it's up to date, you learn a number of cool things, but if you just use that same smartphone, you never update it, you never learn some of the newer things that are coming along, you never evolve. And I'll tell you that in a tech-driven workplace, which all of us are in, everybody out there is in a tech-driven workplace. We look at all of the different companies that are out there. We look back to the Super Bowl. One of the biggest tech companies out there, they tout themselves as a tech company, Rocket Mortgage. It's a mortgage company. How is that tech? But it's a matter of what they're using, what they're doing with tech that drives them ahead, drives them further. And this is every industry. That was just one example. You need to be continuously upgrading your skills, your mindset, and you need to avoid becoming that outdated model of the smartphone, that iPhone 7 that is collecting dust in a drawer, or even worse, still being used. So, first up, you need to have a mindset of learning tech. You need to shift into learning tech on a regular basis. You need to be asking questions. You need to be inquisitive. You need to be finding ways to utilize tech better for doing your job. And all of us have opportunities there. All of us can find new ways to automate what we're doing, utilizing tech. We can find what I will call shortcuts. In that, you've got to be very careful. I'm using shortcut as a way to explain you are driving down your interaction for a series of tasks. You need to be reducing those tasks down and making room for more tasks in other different directions, sometimes exciting directions. So you need to be constantly learning and evaluating and adapting and solving problems utilizing tech. The tech landscape is shifting constantly, and what is cutting edge today will be obsolete tomorrow. So you need to keep track of all of this. And if you have to go on out, you have to take a course in Microsoft Excel, or you have to take a course in whatever programming language or whatever different thing out there. And I'm going far. You may have to take a tech class. Just sit down. How do I use my computer better? It doesn't matter. You should be doing this. And this needs a new mindset. And same with adapting. You need to be able to learn and pivot and to find all of the new things in the newer technologies that are coming. And whether we're talking about the operating system, whether we're talking about the programs you're using, explore the programs you are using. I'll tell you, I've sat down with people and they were going through, okay, so first I go to screen one. And then I go to screen 2, and then I go to screen 7, and then I go to 4, and then I go back to 1, and I start it all over again. Well, if you actually go to screen 8, it'll do everything that you did on all of those other pages, and it'll do it in less time. Or it'll do it a little bit differently, but it'll be a little bit more efficiently. I know that there are people out there. And what they do is they will go through and they will create a brand new document every time. Every time they're working on something, they create a brand new document. Instead of going to the last time they created a document, it may not be 100% accurate, but it may be 90% of the way there. So you only have to do 10% of the work on that second document. And then you've got to do that task again, and you only have to do that 10% over instead of the 100%, or even worse, the 110%, because, yes, things evolve and we forget things and all of that. If you manage to do a job once really well, and you can duplicate that, and that's what technology, it's a lot about that. There's a lot about that in technology, utilizing technology to reduce your overhead, to give you time back to work on other things that are going to be even more profitable, more effective in the workplace. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Patricia reached out to me and she wanted to know all about EMF and 5G and the reports of mental and health damage. And I'll tell you, there's a little bit of commentary on this. Yes, we do hear all about all of these different things about how these different electronic items within our homes can somehow harm us. I will tell you that for most people, and when I say most, I'm talking almost everybody, this isn't a big deal. Smart home devices, yes, they will emit various levels of electromagnetic radiation that are set within safety standards by various regulatory bodies throughout the country, but also throughout the world. And there are so many different things. Everything in our homes has some level of output of radiation. And it's not radiation like we think about it. It's not like, you know, an X-ray or nuclear power plants going awry or any kind of worse thing, handling uranium with your bare hands. Look, this is really at very low levels. Everything outputs radiation. The sun outputs radiation. That's why we get sunburns if we go outside for too long without sunscreen and things like that. My freckles pop during the summer seasons as I get more sun, more radiation, lighting up those freckles. So look, we have to be aware that they are outputting this, but how much damage are they doing? Probably, from most reports, very little. There are people who do become sensitive to it, but they are very, very rare. I'm not a doctor, so for the most part, I'm going to give you the technological answer. First off, you should make sure you're following manufacturer guidelines regarding the device placement, where you're installing it. You want to make sure that you have a safe distance between you and any devices that are putting out a lot of radiation. I remember growing up, don't sit too close to the television, otherwise you'll glow in the dark kind of stuff. That wasn't true then, and it isn't really all that true now. If you have specific concerns, you can move towards wired connections instead of wireless. That will help reduce exposure. You can stop the usage of cell phones and Wi-Fi routers in your house. And you can really look through all of the different things you're dealing with. If you're dealing with a computer, you're going to have very, very low levels of this. It's just a magnetic field. It's very much similar to you handling a magnet, a kitchen magnet that goes on the fridge. Look, if you're concerned, If you are experiencing high levels of lethargy, you're experiencing very odd symptoms that go away when you are out camping, out in the middle of nowhere, then perhaps you might consider seeking out help with a medical professional who will conduct further research and will give you a far more informed decision about whether you happen to be one of the very, very rare people who experience this. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.